Started. Welcome back. It's great to see everyone, both those who are here in person and those who are virtual. Bruchim Abayim, Chodesh Tov, it's Elul. So it's a great opportunity to not just learn, but to really focus on what this time can mean to us. And experiencing Elul in a pandemic is like something we've never experienced before. I think we could say that with confidence, even though I have less life experience than most people in this group. This is really an exceptional opportunity to reflect. And that's something that we've been doing for so long, is reflecting and thinking. And so I wanted to take the next three Sundays, today, the following, and then all the Yontif, but these three opportunities to reflect on one theme. And this theme is oriented toward what we call begin with the end in mind, right? The Sof Maisa B'Machshava Tchila. The goal of what we are building toward now, Chodesh Elul, is in preparation for Rosh Hashanah. And so our goal is to prepare for Rosh Hashanah. Now, Rosh Hashanah has many different aspects to it, but for us, it has one primary focus. We have one job on Rosh Hashanah. Our job is the job of Malchus, Lahamlich, to coronate Hashem. That's why a lot of the things that we say in the davening, like the Gemara says in Rosh Hashanah, Imru Lefanai Malchios, we're supposed to say verses that reflect kingship, Kedei Shetamlichuni Aleichem, so that I should be your king. Our job is to coronate Hashem on Yom Kippur. That's really our job. And the truth is, I don't want to disabuse you of other things which are true but are not actually the focal point. The idea of the Yom HaDin, of Rosh Hashanah being a day of judgment, it's true, but it's not really our focus, in the sense that there's not much we do about that on Rosh Hashanah. That's not our calling. Our calling on Rosh Hashanah is to coronate Hashem. So to do that, we should really think in advance and prepare, what does it mean, Lahamlich, to coronate God? That's going to be our goal ultimately on Rosh Hashanah. We're going to get there whether we are prepared or not, but that's going to be our goal. So to do that, one way we could think about this is through an expression. This expression I had heard, and you can actually watch this, then at some point I watched a video of a man who is probably known to everyone in the Jewish world and beyond. He was one of the most influential, important leaders in the world over the last century, and that was the Lubavitcher Rebbe. There was a sicha, a talk, that the Rebbe gave, and you can picture it a little bit in your mind, for those who have ever seen pictures of the Rebbe or the Rebbe sichas. He's leaning over on his shtender, and he has his black pinched fedora tightly pulled down on his forehead, and he's speaking, you know, he doesn't open his mouth very much, he's speaking right out from his beard. If anybody wants more detail of this from a scientific and a medical standpoint, call Ira Weiss, because he'll tell you exactly what the Rebbe was like. It's an amazing thing. And the Rebbe was giving a sicha, and he referenced an expression. This expression was the expression that he attributed to the Alter Rebbe. The Alter Rebbe was the first Lubavitcher Rebbe, Rav Schneur Zalman of Liadi. And that the Alter Rebbe said that this time, the time of Elul, is what he characterized it as, is Hamelech Basode. The king is in the field. So that's what I'd like to explore together. What does that mean? What did the Alter Rebbe mean, that Hamelech Basode? Now, the Lubavitcher Rebbe, the past Lubavitcher Rebbe, Menachem Mendel Shtirson, he had a particular aspect of it that he wanted to focus on in that sicha. We'll get to that maybe in week three, but I wanted to focus on these simple words, Hamelech Basada. What does that mean? How do we understand that? And what does it mean for us in terms of approaching Rosh Hashanah? The words literally mean the king is in the field. So today we're going to focus on the first word, the king. Next week we could talk about what it means that the king is in the field. And then the third week we could bring that together a little bit. Now, we obviously have no grasp, no concept of what or who Hashem really is. That's Or Ein Sof. That's transcendent light that we could never grasp. But we have an expression. The Gemara says in Brachos, Daf Nun Ches, the Gemara says, Malchusa d'Ara, Malchusa means Malchus, the kingship of Ara, of this earth, is Ke'ein, it's a reflection, it's similar to Malchusa d'Rakia, the heavenly kingdom. Now this is not always true. Sometimes we will have a distinction that's drawn in the Medrash. The Medrash uses a lot of analogies, parables, similes, which we'll draw on. Of course, we do that a lot. My Rebbe Rav Moshe Stav was a master of parables, and we'll mention one of them today. It's not always true like that. Sometimes the Medrash will say, Moshel, there's a parable of a Melech Basar Vadam, an earthly king, and then it'll draw a contrast to Hashem. An earthly king, if the Medrash says in one place, you know, if you put your finger on his nose, he will not appreciate it. But if you put your finger over the Shem Hashem, Kiviyachol, Hashem is very happy that you're focusing on that word of learning. So, that's not what I want to focus on today. But the point is, not every aspect of earthly leadership is correlated with divine leadership, but generally speaking, the Gemara says, Malchusa da'aras ke'e Malchusa da'rakia. That's how the Gemara tells a story. There was a blind man, his name was Rav Sheshes, one of the greatest sages of the Talmud. And Rav Sheshes, he was having conversation with someone, but of course he couldn't see. And they were anticipating the arrival of the king. And then at one point, Rav Sheshes says to him, the king is coming now. And the man looks at him and says, how do you know that the king is coming now? You're blind. You can't see anything. So Rav Sheshes says, yeah, but you know, when the Ribono Shel Olam, when God appeared to Eliyahu Navi in the in the desert, the Navi describes that first there was a huge fire and there was a wind and then there was a kol d'mama daka, a quiet, still voice. And the Navi describes, Lo ba'esh Hashem, v'lo ba'ruach Hashem, not, God is not found in the furnace, he's not found in the wind, he's found in the kol d'mama daka. And that's why when we refer to the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu appearing on Rosh Hashanah, we say, uv'kol d'mama daka yishama. That phrase, kol d'mama daka, from Nisan HaTokef, is borrowed from the description of Hashem in the Navi. Okay. Rav Sheshes says, I know that the king is coming now because this earthly king is paralleling the king above. So there are many parallels, Malchusa da'ara, ke'ein Malchusa da'rakia. So for us to approach Rosh Hashanah, to coronate Hashem, to be ready for Malchios, we got to think about what is a melech. And there are many aspects, but today we're going to focus on three. Three specific attributes, aspects, things that we can identify with a melech that will help us connect to Hashem and understand Hashem. The first is that a melech, when we say the word melech, which means a king, it has the connotation of omnipotence. Now, this is something that's difficult for us to understand because in today's day and age, even the melechim that we are familiar with, the vast majority of them, if they're not despots, you know, they are constitutional monarchs. So, for example, the Queen of England, so she is not an absolute monarch. She is a constitutional monarch, which means that the United Kingdom, the Commonwealth, they have a constitution, and she agrees to be bound by whatever it says in that document, so they have a whole set of rules and regulations. So the Queen is not omnipotent. But in days bygone, and that's why it's really important for us before Rosh Hashanah to get into this frame, because when we say HaMelech, we have to understand what that means. In days bygone, a Melech was literally omnipotent. There were no processes. There was no due process. There were no appeals courts. The Melech was the sole arbiter of every aspect of that kingdom. There was nothing that was beyond the purview and the control of the Melech. If the Melech didn't like how you looked, you would be incarcerated. You would be dead. There was no discussion. There was no limits to the reach of power of the Melech. So whenever we frame this conversation, we have to somehow get into the mindset of being in the presence of an individual who has control over everything beyond even what we could normally imagine, beyond what we could understand. That's the koach, that's the role of the melech. This has an expression, let's say, in the Gemara in Bava Basra, where the Gemara discusses what is the standard size of a road. Right? You wouldn't expect that to be the context in which this would come up, but it has a halachic significance. We have, let's say we're going to agree to build a certain highway or a road. So we're going to build a shvil that's going to belong to an individual. That's going to be one size. A rishus harabim, a public thoroughfare, that's got to be a different size. The Mishnah says in Bava Basra, in Saditas, the Mishnah says, derech hamelech ein lashir. The way of the road of the king, there's no measurement. It means it could be as wide as the king would like it to be. Why? So the Gemara has an expression, melech poreitz geder. Literally means he busts the boundaries. Because a melech has no limits. That one halachic statement, that phrase, melech poreitz geder, it's meant to be taken literally, legally, but it's meant to reflect a much deeper truth. That there are no constraints on the monarch. An absolute monarch has no limitations. It's even beyond, you know, sometimes we would apply this principle in a different halachic context of eminent domain, right? Like today, if the government would like to appropriate, you know, this corner of Dr. Korczak and Arcadia for some purpose, theoretically they could do that, but there's a process. Right? They can't just show up one day without some kind of process. In the context of the melech is poreitz geder because there is no process. The melech is the process. It's all there. How much a person will earn, right? How much a person will make. If you were the tailor of the king, you wouldn't send a tailor of the king. You wouldn't send a bill to the king. The king would decide how much he would pay you. You would wait to find out what your services will bring for you to take home to your family. If you were the doctor of the king, right? You didn't submit Medicare receipts to the king's treasury. Whatever the king felt like giving you, that's what you got. And if you were likable, and if you did well, and if he appreciated you, so you would get more. If you got less, you got less. But there's no... Right? It's all there. It's all up to the melech. People would live and die. That's model number one. That has a certain affect. That has a certain affect, which we're going to keep in mind as we approach Rosh Hashanah. There's no question. Aryeh shog milo yira, the lion roars. Aryeh is Elul, Rosh Hashanah, Yom HaKippurim, Hoshana Rabbah. There is an element of it's all hanging in the balance, which is true. That's absolutely true. It's true. But that's only one dimension. It's only one part of it. That's the first thing. We'll keep it in our back pocket. And that's the basis. And we can't ever let that out of our sight. That the king controls everything. We shouldn't think that we are independent of the king. We only exist at the will of the king. If the king doesn't will us to exist, then we don't exist anymore. That's Aleph. Number two, maybe a more fundamental, a deeper understanding of the king, is to use the metaphor of a prism. What is a prism? A prism is a clear, transparent, let's say, either a rock or a piece of glass or a cubic zirconium, something, it has a particular shape that is multifaceted. And this prism, it collects light from all different directions, and then it reflects or refracts that light in different ways. That's what a prism is. And in some respects, a melech is a prism. Let's explore what that means, because it has three specific connotations to it. Number one, a prism is transparent. It's see-through. It doesn't have its own color. Number two, it incorporates all of the light that's around it, right, from all the different directions where the light is coming in. And number three, it then expresses that light outward, usually in a rainbow, different colors that are going to be refracted through that prism. That is the pshat of a melech. What do I mean by that? So there is a magnificent sefer that I highly, highly recommend for anybody who's interested. It's called Shabbos Malkasa. This book teaches you about Shabbos, and it is a collection of the teachings of Rav Shimshon Pinkus. Rav Shimshon Pinkus was a prominent Rav and Darshan and Mora Derech who lived in Israel, and unfortunately he was killed in a terrible car accident maybe about 25 years ago, maybe longer, 30 years ago. Tufshin Samach Aleph, and we're now in almost 20 years ago, and we're in Tufshin Pei. So Ayin Pei, almost 20 years ago. He gave many drushos, so now there are many shiurim that are published for Rav Pinkus. They're published under, what's it called? Nefesh Shimshon is the series. But the Nefesh Shimshon is only the cassettes, remember cassettes? That's the cassettes that they transcribed and made into books. But while he was living, Rav Shimshon Pinkus himself published three books. This is one of them. It's called Shabbos Malkasa. It's an amazing, amazing sefer. I don't know if it was translated into English. Some of the other ones that were published posthumously were translated, but this sefer is absolutely sensational. And one of the reasons that it's special to me is because it was given to me as a gift by my brother about a year after it was published in Shabbos Nachamu, and I have spent a lot of time learning the sefer. One of the things that we had a gift this summer is that a lot of the boys from the neighborhood, so they were, you know, they were home. They weren't in yeshiva. They had to get sent back from Israel. So we had a group of chevra in this neighborhood who got together on the lawn on the other side of the house on Shabbos afternoon with the same thing. Although I will admit that these were bachrim, so we had to give them snacks. You know, they had mizonos, and it was Shabbos. You had meyer brachos, so everybody had their ice cold soda, their coke, and their mizonos. So we had a bunch of guys, and we learned Shabbos afternoon. We learned Shabbos Malkasa. It was just amazing. It was one of the highlights of my summer. So here, Rav Pinkus talks about malchus, kingship, and the concept of a melech for many pages. And we're going to draw on one aspect, because he discusses many. One aspect that I think relates to this idea of the prism. Because he points out there is a very interesting, like a paradox. Which is that on the one hand, the melech, as we just said a minute ago, is kol yachol. He is capable of everything. But on the other hand, if you were to take the melech out, and sometimes in Hasidic lore, there are stories about the king, lots of mishalom about the king. One of the great stories is the king gets lost, and he finds himself in a forest somewhere. And he's bereft of his whole retinue, he has no soldiers, he has no guards, he has no nothing. So how powerful is that king? He's certainly no more powerful than the average man. He's no stronger than the average man. Potentially, he's even weaker. He's very vulnerable. So on the one hand, the king is omnipotent. On the other hand, the king actually has very little strength at all. If he were to be accosted by bandits, which is what he's always worried about, you know, the king is always worried in the story. Maybe he's going to get caught by bandits, so he ends up at the house of some beggar. That's usually the way that story goes, which is very important, but not for today. The king is vulnerable. So why is that? What's going on with that? Why is the king, on the one hand, capable of everything and yet not? So he explains it based on a deep idea in Kabbalah, which we don't know anything about Kabbalah, but we're going to understand it to the extent that we can. And he starts this discussion with an important contrast. We say in davening every day, in Vayavarech David, we say about God, L'cho Hashem, HaGedula, for you is Gedula, Gevura, Tiferes, right? L'cho Hashem, HaGedula, HaGevura, Tiferes. Now you're starting to think, remember, we once talked about that there are seven ways in which God brings energy into the world. There are seven qualities of life. There are seven spheros, dimensions to the spiritual energy that Hashem gives us. That's what's being referenced here. L'cho Hashem, HaGedula, HaGevura, Tiferes. Va'netzach, Va'hod. We spoke about this when we spoke about Netzach, Zeh Yerushalayim. Kichol Bashamayim of Aretz, which is parallel to number six. That's Yesod, that's Yosef Atzadik, the sixth of the guests who comes to our sukkah. The sixth of the Hakafas. This is a lot of discussion that we've had. The six first attributes. L'cho Hashem, to you, God, are all these six. And then we say, L'cho Hashem hamamlacha. To you, God, is hamamlacha. The coronation, the kingship. Which is, of course, the emphasis on Rosh Hashanah. This is very resonant. In Keren B'Yavna, we had a very memorable Baal Tefillah for the years that I davened in the yeshiva. His name is Rav Rafi Posen, Zichrono Levracha. And he had a very distinct nusach that still rings in my ears today. And that particular line, they had a nusach that had a very clear overtone. It went like this. Ha-ha-mam-lech melochim. Ha-ha-mam-lech melochim v'lo ya-melucha. Ha-mam-lech, ha-mam-lech melochim. Now, the posuk of the yeshiva did not like the fact that many of the piyutim, he repeated the words, but that never stopped him from doing that for like 40 years. But that little ha-mam-lech melochim, you could detect notes from Hatikva. That was part of the nusach, which was very beautiful and very memorable. But this idea of mamlacha, of God being the king, somehow, for some reason, in the Vayavarach David, is separated out. We said, L'cha Hashem, ha-gedula, gevura, teferes, netzach, hod, and then yesod. We said that L'cha Hashem. So we should just say, Kichol ba-shamayim uva-aretz, v'ha-mamlacha. Well, we don't say that. We say, L'cha Hashem on the first six, and then the last one we say, L'cha Hashem again. L'cha Hashem ha-mamlacha. You ever notice that? Not until Rav Pinkus pointed it out, I never noticed it. So Rav Pinkus explains, he says, you have to understand, and we've talked about this, that the spheros, the way in which Hashem brings energy into the world, somehow the divine light that's way, way, way out there, up there, way up there, is filtered down through these different channels. There's a big difference between the first six and the seventh. The first one, let's say, is chesed. That's the attribute of growth, expansion, initiative, kindness, connection. That's a quality. But here's the thing. Somebody could be a very expansive, big-hearted, generous person. But imagine if they were incarcerated or they were impoverished and they had no means of connecting with others. So they could be, at their core, they would be very generous. They would be balei chesed, but they wouldn't express their chesed. Because there's a difference between the koach, the capacity, the potential, and then the befoal, the actual. The first six, kivyachol, are the attributes that we attribute, these qualities that, so to speak, define that energy of Hashem that's coming into the world. It is an aspect of kindness. It's an aspect of strictness. It's an aspect of, and go down. But those aspects don't become manifest into the world. They don't express themselves. They don't come through until somehow they change from bekoach to befoal. What makes them express themselves? How are they manifest? Mamlacha. The first six are attributes, but the seventh is the expression. That's why it's a separate lacha. The seventh attribute, what's called malchus, the expression in the Svarim HaKadoshim, based on the Zohar, the Arizal, the hidden Svarim that we don't know, but we listen to what the kernels are, is the seventh attribute is leis lei migarme klum. It doesn't have anything, it doesn't have its own migarme, literally means from its bones. It doesn't have anything of itself. It's just a conduit to allow the first six to be expressed. Why is that associated with Malchus, with the Melech? Because what we said earlier, that the Melech has all the capacity. Any individual in the monarchy may feel very generous. They might wake up in the morning, they want to help somebody. So they might be able to help them with their time, with their attitude, with their lending them a shoulder to cry on. But the king can do anything. The king can give you funds. Yeah?
Your analogy is prison before.
Yes?
A prison takes a white light, divides it into seven.
Okay.
I mean, it works to six, but it's seven. Coming from one white light, so it fits.
So exactly. So Dr. Kaplan is pointing out that now he understands why we came up with this prism analogy, because the prism is just taking in what was and filtering it out. The prism actually has no identity. It doesn't have its own color. It's not like if you have, let's say you have glasses and there are sunglasses. So whatever color the tint is on the sunglasses, that's what you're going to get on the other end. Leis le migar me klum means it has nothing of itself. It has no color. The concept of Malchus, this seventh sphere, this seventh attribute, it doesn't have its own identity. It just takes in from all and it shares out. Now he's talking about how Malchus relates to Shabbos, because Shabbos collects all the energies of the week and then expresses it for the coming week, etc. And he talks about this in many different dimensions and many ways. It's leis le migar me klum. It doesn't have any identity. So where does the koach of the melech come from? The koach of the melech comes from all of the subjects. It's the exact same thing. The extent to which the melech thinks that he or she is all-powerful in and of themselves is the extent to which they're fooling themselves, and they're going to end up in a forest one day feeling vulnerable because they actually don't have any inherent power. But their power is from all that is nichlal in them. That's why the malchus, melech, is related to the idea and the word of kolel. It's collecting. It's the kol. It collects all of that light that exists around, and then it's going to reflect it out through those different colors. This is, all right, we'll take a 1 minute digression. This is why he explains there is an aspect of gematria that makes a lot of sense when you explain it, but initially it's very hard for people to understand. In gematria, sometimes there is the idea of, oh, it's one number off, that's okay. Right, so where did that come from? Why is it that in gematria there's a difference of one number? The answer is, it's not because it's okay to be off one in gematria. It's because gematria relates to a numerical value of something which has to include two things. The first six, the essential components of the thing, and then the seventh, which is the kolel. So let me give you an example. So this chair that I'm sitting on, naniach for a second, it's 1, 2, 3, 4 metal pieces and 2 plastic pieces. 1, 2. Okay? So if someone were to ask you, what number would you associate with this chair? How many parts are in the chair?
I'd say 6.
So you would say 6.
The whole is greater than the sum.
Bingo, the whole is the same thing. If somebody went and called me up and said, I would like to ask you, can I borrow your 6 metal pieces and 2 plastic pieces? Because that's all it is, right? But of course, the sum is not just, it's actually not quantitatively greater than the parts, but it is qualitatively, it's a totally different dimension. When you take these 6 parts and you put them together, you have added another aspect. That's called the kolel. That is the added dimension. There's nothing new about it. Malchus, and there's more to say about this on much deeper levels. This is explained at length in a sefer, Kabbalistic sefer called Shari Ora, where he talks about Malchus and how Malchus has different expressions. But the melech is like the prism now, because the melech is that kolel, is that entity that represents, that includes the entirety of the monarchy. We see that person and he represents everyone together. He expresses all of those qualities. So this is the second element, that the melech now is going to relate to each person. Without those individuals, there is no melech. The melech has no capacity. But at the same time, because, and this we're not going to talk about so much today, Mirtz Hashem will talk about it more in 2 weeks, because the melech is kolel everyone, and the melech is now understood he's omnipotent, when you identify with the melech, that says a lot of significance for you, right? That's going to mean a lot. You're part of that malchus, right? You fit into this picture. The melech, on the one hand, You're seeing this, this interesting distinction. On the one hand, the Melech is distinct from, like the Maharal says, the Melech is above the people. That's why he wears a crown. The crown, you can take a group of people, they're standing together, the crown is going to stand out because the Melech is above the people. But on the other hand, the Melech is mikerev achecha. He's similar in a certain sense. He's connected to the people. Even though he's muvdal, the Maharal says, he's separated, but he's connected to the people because that's from where he draws his authority. That's where he draws his koach from. So those people, all the people in the kingdom, are to some extent connected to the Melech. So number one is that the Melech is omnipotent. Number two, the Melech is the prism. And so there is a relationship between what the Melech draws from the people in terms of that omnipotence, that strength, but also what the Melech projects out and how he relates to those subjects. That's number two. But then there's number three. It's not just that the Melech has all the capacity because he's omnipotent. It's not just that the Melech is the prism, so he actually reflects it out. He is the leis lemigar miklum, but he is the befoal. He actualizes all of that, but there is an association with the Melech. It's not just about what the Melech is, it's about how people feel about the Melech, because I think it's an important counterbalance to point number one. The affect of point number one can be very intimidating. But the truth is that that's not really what a Melech is about. Rav Stav, I mentioned before, he once pointed out, and and I learned in yeshiva in the late 90s, so at that time, this man was still living, although he died just at the end. Rav Stav pointed out that he thought that in the world, the last living Melech was King Hussein, the late King of Jordan. Why? Why did he say that? Well, there's a big difference between a Melech, a king, and a Moshel, a ruler or a despot. That's like when the brothers said to Yosef, Hamaloch Timloch Aleinu, you think you're going to be the king over us? Im Mashol Timshol Banu, if you think you will be the dominator of us, we're not going to submit to you. In either way, they were wrong, of course. They did ultimately bow to him, but they're not the same. Just because somebody has all the power in a society doesn't mean he's a melech, doesn't mean he's a king. Why did Rav Stav say that Hussein was the last melech? Even though it happens to be Hussein was a constitutional monarch, that's also a melech. There was an article in the Baltimore Sun in 1999. They sent a guy to Jordan. I don't know why. He went to Jordan and he was doing like an interview with people. And he came back and he saw something interesting that he reported. He said in most of the homes of people whom he interviewed in Amman, they had in their house a picture of King Hussein. And he said it was clearly not because there was some kind of secret police that was enforcing that as a rule. There was no law that you had to have a picture of the king in your house, and nobody was checking. He said, but it was so interesting, this reporter, that people had a picture of the king in their house, of King Hussein. Why do you think they did that? Because the people of Jordan, honestly, every strata of life, they loved King Hussein. If you read descriptions of King Hussein's funeral from 1999, he was treated here in the Mayo Clinic in Minnesota, and then he was flown back when he died. He died in Jordan. People wept openly in the streets because they loved the king. There is an association with the king being beloved. And lahavdil elef alfei alafim, we don't have a king in this country. And we have a president. I'm going to leave it at that. We have the institution of the presidency. We can even say it better. But you know what? That has, you know, if you think back, before my time, people told me, and you could see pictures of this, when JFK was assassinated, people were crying all over. Why were they crying? I saw a story. There's a story from that Reb Melech Biederman tells in one of his Sfarim of the Pnei Menachem, the previous Ger Rebbe. That somehow the Pnei Menachem, the Friediker Ger Rebbe, was given a book, was reading a book about some American non-Jew. Now, why the Pnei Menachem was reading this book, I have no idea, but apparently he was. Can't tell you more than that. The Pnei Menachem never stepped foot in Yeshiva University, but he was reading this secular book. And apparently he would tell the story over and over that he was reading, got a hold of this book, and someone shared it with him or whatever. And in this book, it tells the story of a guy, and I don't know in which presidency this was, because this probably could not happen today, of someone who had been planning, an American citizen, a guy, who had been planning to sneak in to talk to the president. And it must have been a mall when the security wasn't so tight, that somehow this guy snuck in to the White House and found his way into one of the side meeting rooms where the president happened to be sitting, and he was talking to the president for 2 minutes. And it describes in the story, the Pnei Menachem says, that this guy, after 2 minutes of talking to the president, was found out by the Secret Service. They came in, they arrested him, and he was in prison for 6 months. And the guy said that it was totally worth it. That was worth being incarcerated for 6 months to have 2 minutes to talk to the president. Which is a pela de gazach. And the Pnei Menachem would tell this story. Why would the Pnei Menachem tell this story? Because he says, Hafla of a fellow, you see how beloved the president was, that this guy would be willing to sit in jail and rot in his cell for 6 months just to have the opportunity for 2 minutes to talk to the king, to the president, who's not even the king. So the Shem Yishmol points out that the melech is the lave of the people. So until now, we understand very well. Number one, without a lave, without a pulse, we get no, you can't oxygenate the blood. You know what I'm saying. You can't live without that. That's the koach of everything. That's omnipotent. That's Aleph. Number two, beis, the blood, there's this, the circulatory system. There's an in-out. There's a leis lemi garme klum. The heart is a muscle. You'll correct me if I'm wrong on this. The heart is a muscle that, we need that. The heart is a muscle that doesn't actually have its own identity in terms of the blood. It's just bringing in and out. But if you take that, right, it's an exchange where, you know, this comes in, the air and the oxygen, it comes and goes, the whole thing, right? So it's very much like a prism, a shtickle. But I think that the melech being the lave of the am has another aspect, and that is that the lave is associated with emotion, with feeling, and with love. And that there is a reciprocal love relationship in an ideal way between the king and the people. That's a true melech. That's a melech. And that's really the counterpoint, so to speak, to the first aspect of the melech of being omnipotent. That the king, yes, he has all the power, but on the other hand, people love him. People said about King Hussein, in this article it describes, people had such affection for him. He was known to stop on the side of the road with his ride and pick up somebody who was hitchhiking, or if somebody, you know, needed help with healthcare, they got the word. Like, there was a feeling of affection for the king. And so when we think about HaMelech Basodeh, this is the time we're preparing for Malchios. Step one is to understand what a king is. It's to understand that, on the one hand, the king is everything. He has all the koach. It's to understand that the king has this unique prism-like quality, that he accepts the Malchus, the power from the Kolel, but he projects that out to everyone, and that there is a connection. And that connection is a feeling, is associated with love. So now that we have a picture of a melech, we can gather our thoughts in anticipation of being mamlech, that king. And Mir Tzashem, next week we'll talk a little bit more in terms of specifically what it means that the melech is basadeh. So thank you all for coming. Have a great week. Stay healthy.
In Morocco.
Yes. Have-